And welcome back to Mead and Moonlight, the Pagan Folk Podcast, with me, Nicholas, and Kuhn. And this episode, we're going to talk about our favorite things, ourselves, and also about all the wonderful Pagan Folk festivals and folk and medieval fairs that exist throughout our known space, which is Germany and the Netherlands, mostly, and Belgium, probably. Well, anyway, hello, Kuhn.
Good day. How are you doing, my friend Niklas?
I'm doing quite well. I had a bit of a hiccup there when we first started recording, but I think I'm cool now and ready to do this.
No, I'm all for calling this mean and mood light. Yes, I completely down with that.
Yes.
Yeah, so welcome back.
Thanks for calling me out.
Yes. I'm so unbelievably sorry. Welcome back to another episode. And, well, I'd like to say thank you to all the positive comments and happy energy that we received for the first episode. As you can hear, I've upgraded my microphone just for this podcast. Wow. Is it? Yep. Okay. So, we are going to talk about ourselves. Like Niklas said, and then mainly, how the hell did we go to pagan folk festivals and music as fans, and how the hell and why in the God's name did we decide to try and climb the stage to impress other people with the product that we fell in love with?
Yeah, precisely. We thought it would be interesting to sort of try and build this whole podcast and do some establishing episodes where we sort of set the ground for the whole thing. I think Kuhn really did a good way just now of describing what we're going to do today. Maybe you even want to start and like what was the first pagan folk song you ever heard? Can you remember?
Yes, I think I can. And it's not a very, very heroic story at all. It's at some point I had an album of Omnia on my computer. I ripped it from a CD that I got and I tried to listen to it. And the first half a minute of Tina Bjelltner, and I always turned it off because it didn't really resonate. I was like, French harp, I don't know if I like this. And then that has gone on for quite some time. And I first started listening to Rapallo, actually, just the traditional Irish folk, until I saw Only Alive for the first time. That was at when it still existed, the Midsummer Fair in Archeon in Alphen aan den Rijn in the Netherlands. And they were playing on a very too small of a stage, but it mesmerized me. I picked up the Pagan Folklore DVD, and then I decided I would like to play the flute like that.
I think if I remember correctly about your sort of musical past, you already had some experience with playing wind instruments, right?
Yeah, I actually started playing the saxophone when I was 10 years old, and I went from classical music, playing in the local band, the not the fanfare, but the harmonie. I don't know how they say that in English. And then I started playing jazz, which is why I have this really weird influences still in my flute playing. I played Roaring Twenties jazz. And my brother was actually the flute player of the family. I stole all his flutes and started rehearsing Omnia songs and other traditional music. And, well, things got slightly out of hand, actually.
So, but I guess you were already familiar with at least, like, the whole, I don't know, like the whole vibe of like fantasy and mythology. Were you already down with that, or was that something you discovered purely through that type of music?
No, when I was younger, I used to always listen to Harry Potter, falling asleep. I was huge on Lord of the Rings and stuff like that. So there was always an inkling for me to go to fairy tales and look at Brian Froud's work. And we also had the book from Alan Lee, Fairies. And so it was just really nice to actually see that there was a scene complementing this high fantasy fairy tale thing. And I was super excited to get into that because that was something that I always missed. When I played saxophone, I could purely play music from the sheet. I could read notes perfectly. And when I started playing flute, I didn't read any notes anymore. And I think that really helped me break out of my shell and create Pagan Folk, actually.
Oh, that's so cool. I think with, obviously, due to our involvement in the music, we meet a lot of people who play Pagan Folk. And I think it's always super interesting to talk to other people how they got started playing that music. It's so interesting how many different influences there are. Like, some people take their Pagan Folk influences from a whole different musical genre, or like from a whole different field of influences than you know, someone like you would. I think that's something that I find so exciting about the genre, is that it's so diverse from where people come to it.
Definitely. In our band, in my band, in Seed, everybody's has got a huge metal background. I used to love Camelot and their melodic songs as well. So I think there's good crossover from metal to folk as well, and you see it a lot. On that note, Niklas, what the hell? What the hell did you start out with? Why the hell did you end up in this underground niche scene?
I have a very bad memory, so I probably can't recall the precise moment I first encountered Pagan Folk music. But I think I definitely started out listening to a lot of medieval rock. I don't know if that's such a thing in the Netherlands, but I mean, you probably know like bands like Saltatio Mortis or In Extremo, right?
Yeah. We've heard of them. I think we also have Feuerschwanz. Is it sort of also a bit?
Yeah, I get. Like, but I didn't listen. I didn't listen to them. I didn't listen to them because I don't like funny music.
Okay. Yeah. Well. Yes. You're always so serious.
I am.
But we didn't really have those bands a lot in the Netherlands, but they're obviously big names. So yeah.
So I think it probably started for me having a friend whose older brother was into medieval rock music. So I got introduced through that, and then I was reading like a lot of metal magazines at that time when I was, I don't know, like 12, maybe 12, 13. And I remember very distinctly on one of the backs of those magazines, there was a very, like, a page long ad for the new Saltatio Mortis album at that time. And that sort of, I think it was like a Flaming Phoenix or something. And I thought that looked so cool. So I begged my parents to get that for me for Christmas. And I was really hooked by then, you know. It's just like, oh, that's so cool. It has like cool melodies, and they sing about stuff that I can read about in like the historical fiction novels I would love to read, and about the in the fantasy novels. So that was like, that really clicked well together for me. So that's how I got into that. And I think I was always very interested in mythology. My parents would take me and my sister a lot to Greece when we were younger, you know, to a lot of these islands that are there, and you can watch all those temples, and they have a lot of cool ruins. And I think I got my hands on, when we were there some year, I got my hands on a book about Greek mythology, and that was basically, I thought, like, oh well, this is like fantasy but real. So I devoured that, and when I discovered that there is like cool folk music that sounds mystical and sort of deep and dark that combines that music with themes of mythology and myth and legend. I was like, that was so cool. I was super into that.
Nice, nice, cool. That's fun to see you actually coming from something completely different from a Samo background. And at that point, did you already play an instrument, actually?
My history with playing musical instruments is a bit embarrassing because there were several points when I was a child or even like an adolescent where I would ask my parents, you know, please pay for my music lessons. I really want to learn how to play the guitar. But then I never practiced and was always very nervous about going to the lessons because I never practiced. And so I always quit that sooner or later. And then I only started really picking up the guitar again when I wanted to sing because I could accompany myself on the guitar. And then I think a lot of it has to do with Nina, with whom I also play in Waldkauz. I think we really influenced each other when we started out playing, you know, just traditional folk songs together and then also covering some Faun and Omnia, and we did like a little bit of, you know, music on the street, and we recorded some very bad demos of some of the songs. So I think, without having someone who I could do this with, I probably wouldn't have pursued it, you know, in any way.
So the real question is, Niklas, do those demos still exist? And do the covers still exist on the interwebs? Where can we find them?
I think actually some of the demos still exist. I think we recently listened to them even.
Nice.
But I'm not going to tell you how to find them. I might tell you personally, but I won't tell the people listening.
I will definitely not post the links on our Facebook, guys.
It's so great. I know that I can trust you, Kuhn. I'm so thankful for that.
Yeah, you definitely can. Yeah. It's all for the podcast, Niklas. It's all for the podcast. So, you go, man.
Now I think I'm just going to like to try and finish the story. A lot of it was accidents and pure chance. Because a lot of the time you just meet the right people at the right moment and then you just do things, right? I mean, if we wouldn't have met Waldkauz when we did, we probably wouldn't have gotten anywhere, just the two of us playing. So when we could join them, I think that was really the starting point of thinking like, oh shit, we can do this. This is a thing that can happen, that can be a thing to some regard. So I think that was the real start of me thinking, oh, now I play music.
Yeah, that's actually bizarre that it's not just you and someone you meet at random, but it's at several other people that are apparently into the same things and that are willing to explore this crazy, maybe very new style of music and delve into that together. And it was a great revelation that there was an entire world scene dedicated to that, and bands that you could discover through connections of other bands and internationally. It's the realization that there is actually a traveling medieval festival that completely blew my mind and made the world quite a bit more beautiful. It's unbelievable. Like you said, a band is not just you. It can be, of course, but the bands that we are now in are actually, because how many members does Waldkauz have at the moment?
We are six people. Yeah,
that's mad. And I have five, and there's loads of other bands doing the same weird stuff, and that's actually great. Niklas, what was the first festival where you saw bands like Samo?
I think probably the the MPS, the Mittelalterliche Fantasiespektakulum, which, for those of you that don't know, which I assume are not many people probably, is a very big traveling medieval fair in Germany. I think it also used to go to Austria, maybe not, I don't know. But yeah, I think that's probably the first festival I really went to. But it's also a medieval fair, but it's really focused a lot on music and on bands. A lot of bands play there. I think that also was the first time, probably, where I saw Faun and Omnia also. Maybe not Faun. I think I went to an acoustic show of Faun before I saw them at a festival. But yeah, for some years, that was a thing that we did twice or thrice a year. In the summer, we would go with a couple of friends. We would go to those medieval fairs and then camp out and just enjoy all the good things that festivals like this have to offer.
Yeah. And if there's one, okay, you just said you had a bad memory, but maybe there's one cool memory. What really made these festivals stand out to you? And what is something that you, me, and probably a lot of other people, what is one of the things, if you had to name one, that you really look forward to in festivals like these?
Yes, I have an answer to that.
Good.
I mean, I think to me it really is like a combination of many different things. I wouldn't really single out one thing. It's this combination of being out in, you know, in a warm summer's day or a warm summer's night and being there with people you like. And one thing that I really enjoy about these festivals, doesn't matter if it's in Germany or in the Netherlands or in Belgium or even in Italy, is that you can almost instantly connect with the people there. I wouldn't say that I'm an introvert, but in just everyday life, I don't go out of my way to socialize with people I don't know. But at these festivals, it's so easy to talk to people and to just instantly connect to them on some level. And that combined with cool music and a cool beverage and a nice fire in the night is, I think, a pretty perfect combination.
Yeah. And because the cool thing, like you said, it's not just one thing. One thing I've come to realize is that every person that goes to one of these festivals actually has a different, well, it's weird to say it like that, but I hope the listeners understand, has one sort of main reason they go there. You have the people that go there for the music. You have the people that go there for the LARP. You have the people that go there for the reenactment. Maybe there's people that just go for the food or the great toilets or the workshops, the readings. It's actually a very cool thing to that I've come to realize. There are so many cultures in one sort of subculture and they all coexist. Basically.
Yeah, but I think actually that's probably something that's more unique to the festivals that you attend in the Netherlands. I think, of course, in Germany it's also very diverse, but I haven't, here mostly, yeah, the main focus is usually like music or then the crafts and food stalls. That's usually, I think, I guess the reenactment also, but it's not these. I think in the Netherlands, you have a lot of connection between like the fantasy scene and the medieval, like pagan folk scene, whatever. And I think in Germany, apart from like some festivals, some special events, I think they exist still a bit more separate, actually. But I think,
right, interesting.
Yeah. That's so interesting to see as we travel like from Germany to the Netherlands or to Belgium or to Italy. That's the only countries we've ever really played in, I think. It's interesting to see that there is still, even though it is like a similar vibe, there is still differences to how exactly people do things. But it's all great, really. I mean, by now, you know, I have a confession to make. By now, it has even come to the point where I miss the sound of bagpipes.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I know.
You sort of broke up there. Can you say that again?
I'm willing to repeat that. I miss the sound of bagpipes.
Well, this was the Pagan Folk Podcast Media Moonlight. This was our last episode. Bye. Now, well, Niklas, I don't think I can say it because it will be on the interwebs forever. But I might back you up there. At this moment, I would pay to have a bagpiper on my doorstep. Actually, I just want the smell of fire triggers me. Everything remotely close to a bagpipe, so a creaking radiator, it just makes me long for the festivals.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, sometimes I'm such a hypocrite because we're joking here, of course, but I think everyone who attends more than maybe two or three types of these events a year will at some point eventually get annoyed by the sound of bagpipes because it's, you know, it's very omnipresent. It's, you know, when the bagpipe is being played, it is being heard everywhere. You can't really escape it. So it can be a bit annoying, but when I'm there at the festival and like the bagpipes fire up for the first time and then there's some drums behind that, I'm like, oh shit, this is actually kind of cool.
Yeah, I can totally get into that. Where was it going? Yeah, because I saw when I got together with my girlfriend, she had a cup with Sour Patrol on it, and I listened to them. And I was like, I watched them on YouTube. Like, okay, well, what is she so into? Because she did go to German festivals. I've only been to MPS Weihnachtsmarkt once, and I did a Wave Gothic Treffen when we played with Leaf Seed combined there. So I looked that up, and then as a YouTube video, it didn't work for me. It didn't resonate. But when I got to the festivals, I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah, it's really, yeah, it's a unique atmosphere for sure. Now I'm also feeling a very strong longing inside me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing I'm going...
But let's... No, sorry, you go ahead.
Well, you sort of threw me off, man. You threw me off.
Well, let's just talk about something else. So, I think I talked a lot about how I finally got to be in a band and to really feel like I could call myself a musician, even though that might be something I am still hesitant to do sometimes because, you know, what's called imposter syndrome. Yeah, but how about you, like? What is Seed the first like Pagan Folk band you ever played in, or do you have like further like former experience with playing that type of music?
No. Well, actually, if I think about this, yeah. When everybody that is in Seed only started playing that instrument the moment they joined Seed, and that the same goes for me as a flute player. I only ever played saxophone, and I have one undercover, private listed tenor saxophone cover of The Raven by Omnia. But that was the closest I got to playing Pagan Folk before Seed. So no, I actually have no experience. So it was actually, I do remember like the day of yesterday, writing the first song, and if I listen to it now, my ears start to bleed. But you have to start somewhere.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's interesting that we are sort of have like a similar history in that regard, because you know, Waldkraut is also the first band I ever played in, and it's so cool that we both had the privilege and the opportunity to take the bands to the point where they are now. I think we've both released at least two albums, right?
We have one demo with all the before mentioned songs that should never see the light. There was only a limited print because we didn't have any money, of course. So I think about 100 or 150 people in the world have it. And then we have two full-length albums working on our third. So yeah, same. Yeah, two.
Was the did you sell the first demo at Castlefest?
Yes. I was guesting with Omnia at Autolonto, and they allowed us to sell our demo there.
I think we might have that actually because of that.
Okay, wow. That is unfortunate.
Now I remember because I think we mentioned it in the last episode that we've sort of known each other for some time, but not really also. And I just remember that I think the first time I probably took notice of you and what you were doing was, I mean, most likely through Facebook. And then I said, oh, shit, look, that's the guy from Seed. I know from the internet, and they're selling CD. Let's check that out.
Nice, nice. That was, yeah, the internet is a blessing and a curse in that regard, eh? It's horrible in the regard that there's a lot of stupid content, frustrating content, stupid people using internet anonymity. But then again, would I have met or known of your existence without? Probably not. And I'm very happy that I do, and that we can now use this podcast actually as an excuse to get each other to know each other better. No, of course not. We're doing this for you, the listener.
We're doing this for money.
Loads of money. Oh my God, this sponsorships, Nicholas. Did you see the last email?
Yes.
It's crazy.
Yes.
No, but
I mean, even with tax, but it's still.
It's actually cool. A thing that not many people know, and I don't know if I should be saying this, but what the hell? When we first started out with Seed, I, of course, started out with Lars and Esme, my girlfriends at the time. Lars and me made sort of, I don't know, a tier list of pagan folk bands, sort of examples, and we were also watching newer bands sprouting up in the Netherlands and surrounding countries. And we sort of classified Wildcats in the same sort of wave, upcoming newer waves inspired by bands like Faun or Omnia and stuff, the more settled bands like... So it's interesting, and I'm very happy about it, to see that Wildcats is still kicking as well. Because we've seen a lot of bands, sadly, cease to exist. Because I don't know if a lot of people know this. It's not necessarily... It doesn't go from itself. Sorry, I don't know how to say it in English. It isn't a given that your band stays together and grows over years and keeps sharing the same passion. So I'm very happy to see kindred souls and spirits in Wildcats.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think, I don't know if we've said it on the podcast, but I think I mentioned it the last time we talked, is that, we definitely consider ourselves and also Seeds and also bands like Kieser, I guess, or... also newer bands like Vael from Spain. I think we always talk about them as, you know, second wave pagan folk. So, you know, that's, it's so interesting because, with the, original pagan folk bands, I mean, I always just think of Omnia and Faun, which is probably unfair because I think there's probably bands that were around or that are around from like a similar time of
If you ask me, a band that doesn't play at our festivals yet, I think they're actually they got together again. It's some band I listened to fervently was for example Hedningarna. There's definitely older. A value on what is pagan folk, that's probably something we can dive into and look at the history more. But for me, things that Jeffro Tull did was pagan folk to me. So it's interesting. And I think it definitely goes way further back than than Fauna and Omnia, but if you look at what they have done for the scene and the festival scene, I think it's very fair to give them a pedestal of their own there.
Yeah, definitely. I think I only got into Hidden in Ghana and Ghanmana, like both of these Scandinavian folk bands. I mean, it's probably not fair to just call them folk bands, like folktronica, I think, is a term I sometimes read. But yeah, anyway, I think I only got into them fairly recently, like maybe 2 years ago. But when I listened to them, I thought, like, oh, that's where they got that from. And, you know, thinking of Faun. So it's really interesting to see. I don't know. And I wonder how much further you can trace those influences. Trace those influences back in musical history.
Yeah. For the maybe we have some metalheads listening to this podcast. If we've seen the documentary, Metal Headbangers Journey, they did a huge split diagram of all the genres that existed and sprouted new subgenres, the new metal, and so it would actually be super interesting to do that for Pagan Folk. Actually, yes, let's do that.
Yeah, sure. Let's do not only the podcast. Let's also do like a huge documentary.
Yes. Yeah.
That should be be easy,
we'll
right?
Just do a crowdfunding or oh no, wait. We have all the sponsors, so
yeah, it's we're good. Super easy. So I think I don't know. That pretty much sums up my discovery of Pagan Folk, I guess. You know, going all the way back to my children, to my youth as a very small child in Greece, and looking at ruins and thinking like, oh shit, that's cool.
Yeah, that's already super cool. If you, I also, by the way, went to, I don't know what they call it in other countries. I went to the gymnasium school. It's where you get Latin and ancient Greek as well, so I can completely relate with their fantastical stories and Zeus doing whatever he wants with whomever he pleases, to other more fantastical satyr stories and fairy stuff. That's definitely a huge, huge inspiration. And I find it very interesting to see that there are sort of bands take from all of these cultures, which makes it a very eclectic scene and inspiration taken from everywhere, so it's cool to see that your roots also lie there, and I'm interested to see the diagram with all the bands to see where Samo is in regards to other bands and other sort of folk pagan folk bands.
Yeah, it's probably, I don't know, yeah, it probably goes back, I mean, I don't know, but it probably doesn't go back as far as we imagine. I think the earliest is probably like the very early 90s with where everything's... I don't know, let's not delve into that too much. Let's talk about nice things. Let's talk more about festivals. What's your favorite drink at like a medieval fair or at like a nice folk festival?
Oh God, drinks. I like drinks. Well... one thing pops to mind, and that was something I had at only one festival, and they don't really sell that in the Netherlands. So I was at Wave Gothic Treffen in Heidnischdorf, and they were selling this liquid in 20 different flavors in huge bottles with hoses in them, and then you could buy like pink bottles. I don't know. They were like fruity wine mead things, and well, maybe you know what I'm talking about and where I can buy it, or maybe someone in the audience knows what the hell I'm blabbering about. But generally, when I'm at Castlefest, I tend to head over to now the Delftse Mederij, which is a very nice ambachtelijke craftsman meadery, selling exquisite high-end meads. Mead.
I'm so lost when you say Dutch words. I'm like, yes, what?
What?
How?
What word?
Hey? I don't know, all the Oh, that probably was unpleasant to listen to. I'm sorry. I'm not apologizing to you. I'm apologizing to the audience.
Okay. Well, maybe they enjoyed it as well. And what was...
It's ASMR.
Yes, it is. Let's scratch our microphones. Or answer the question, what is your go-to drink at a festival?
So I want to talk about mead.
Okay.
Because I think a lot of you are familiar with mead, and I think a lot of people listening are also familiar with mead. And I think... I'm not sure. If you would ask me if mead is underrated or overrated, or where it like sits on my list of drinks that I like, I'm not sure where I would put it. I think everyone has probably made the experience of buying some terrible, very sweet mead like from a local supermarket, and then you drink it and you get a terrible headache the next morning. And generally there's the experience of at least in Germany, where you just walk around a medieval fair and someone you barely know will walk up to you and hold like their giant drinking horn and take, oh, here, take a swig. And then there's this giant horn that's filled with some very weird liquid, and it smells sort of sweet. So you just take a sip, and then you have this weird taste of horn. And it's also, of course, it's summer, so it's very warm, and you don't know how many people have drunken out of that horn before. So you have this very weird combination of flavors and feelings.
Yeah, you're sort of brothers and sisters with everybody that took a swig. I've definitely had my weird 5-liter horns coming my way, or people after a performance saying, here man, you've really got to try this. And I'm like, okay, I see that there's hardly anything left in the bottle, so there comes the theory that how much spit is actually in there, but that's for another time. But yes, there's a weird sort of brotherly culture around mead. And by the way, you said buy mead in the supermarket. If you go to a real Gallegal in the Netherlands, which is a wine and liquor store, they don't know what the hell mead is. If you ask, do you have any mead? Wait, what? Mead, you know, honey wine. They don't know. It's a subculture amongst wineries as well.
I think in Germany, I mean, it's probably a regional thing also what you can get, but usually they have like one type of mead that you can get. It's also sometimes it's a seasonal thing. You know, where like and maybe in spring and then in winter where you can get this sort of like for like mulled wine, you can get something that is also mead, but like winter mead. And then, yeah, but it's not very good. We're probably not going to be endorsed by them anyway. So to all the German listeners, I'm talking about Katlenburger mead, which is
Katlenburgische mead. Yeah, I know that one. Actually, funny story. When I was in Solo, we used to celebrate the changing of the seasons, and while we were pretty close to the German border, we would sometimes choose the cheaper option and get lots of Katlenburger mead because it's like €3 a bottle. And we definitely felt the headache and the satisfaction. We always put it. First, we drank all the good mead that we had, and then we switched to Katlenburger because you wouldn't taste it anyway.
That's very reasonable, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
So you do know Katlenburger mead, okay. Yeah, so I think that's the one you usually can get at the supermarket. I think a couple of times is like when you go to a local supermarket and they maybe have something. If there's, is it called a beekeeper? Yeah, I think if there's like a local beekeeper who also does mead or... I guess usually they do like more of a honey schnapps than mead, but I think that's the stuff you can usually get.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'd definitely on a festival, I'd like to also support smaller companies like Delft Meerderij, or because there's a big one, Mead & More, that has shite loads of variety. as well. It was very, very good ones in there as well. When I'm at in the Netherlands, we have some winter festivals popping up. Then I would love buying me some apple cinnamon or apple pie mead, being hot, and drink that. That's bloody brilliant. That is for me the festival winter feeling in a bottle.
That sounds so good. I want that right now.
Well, I have a surprise for you, Niklas.
Oh, you're right it's outside my there. Door. Oh no, oh, sad.
I can't, sadly.
I think we, as I'm still thinking about drinking on or like drinks on the festival, I think we have been very spoiled. At least, you know, we in Waldkaus have been very spoiled to some regard, because at the MPS there was there is this stall that just makes and sells cocktails there. So you can just go to a medieval fair, and then there is this sort of like pirate ship bar on land. It's called the Tortuga Inn, and they just make cocktails, and you can just go there and get a cocktail, and that's the most amazing thing. So you can stand there, and it's been a hot day, and you're sort of exhausted from either playing or just attending the festival. But you're not really ready to quit yet, you know, to call it a night, because there are so many cool people that you don't meet too often. So you're pushing yourself to have some more energy, and then you just go there and you just get a nice mojito, and it's the world's, you know, it can't get any better, really.
Yeah, I think a lot of people can relate that your self-preservation definitely suffers if there's a lot of cool people at a festival to still be hanging around with, and they also have the headaches in their memories. But in that regard, Germany and their catering and drink stands are like next level at a lot of festivals compared to Dutch stands. And that's also what you see a lot in the Netherlands, that a lot of German catering is there, because I would like a pirate cocktail bar at a Dutch festival. Someone make it happen, please.
yeah,
in the backstage, maybe even.
Yeah, it's really, I don't know, it's really something special. And I think that's also, I was just thinking about, that's something that I love about festivals, but also something that's always makes me really nervous is the amount of cool people you want to talk to, because there's too many. That's something that I really realized at the last time we played Castlefest, and there were like loads of people that I didn't get to talk to properly because there just wasn't enough time to do that.
Yeah, it always feels like a mission failed kind of thing, because afterwards you see everybody's picture like, wait, you were there? Shit, man, why didn't I see you? Why didn't I have the time? Couldn't I stop the time? Because I don't know if many people realize, or that's what I felt at least. When I started playing at festivals, it's unbelievable how much time goes into your gig on the day itself. It's not just the playing or getting your instrument there. It's the mindset, it's the logistical stuff, it's the getting all your instruments back to a safe spot. And that completely suffers, and sometimes I miss that, that hanging out with everyone. Because, like you said, there's not enough time, man. There's not enough time.
No, true. And, I think as when you play at a festival, you lack the freedom of just being able to go wherever you want, because there's just mandatory things that you have to take care of, just, you know, just even loading in. Or, sometimes before a concert, you have to be there like 90 minutes in advance to be ready for, you know, to like change over and soundcheck and whatnot. And so you miss out on a lot of things. So that's, but I think, I still manage to talk to some of the people. So it's usually like a blessing. Sometimes when you, when you get the schedule for a day where you're playing at a festival and you are on stage sort of early, which is a bit of a bummer, because usually the concerts later in the day are the ones that are better attended and where people are more into dancing and into, you know, doing all the nice participation things, there's just more energy and just more people there. But also when you play early, you also usually you need a little bit of time afterwards to pack down your things. But then you have the rest of the day just free and can talk to the people and can also just watch other bands play, which is also something that we miss out on a lot, because bands will just play shortly after your set or maybe even during your set on a different stage.
Yeah. I also have this thing, I don't know if you have the same or if any other musicians have the same thing. I always go into hibernation mode the day of a gig. If I have to play in the evening, I'll be super low energy and conserving all my energy. And afterwards, it all sort of releases onto the world. So I completely feel your thing that it's sort of a bummer. Always, if you play the really early or the earlier slots, because it's like what you said, attendance wise and energy wise, it's generally less optimal. But releasing that energy after the gig on an earlier time of day, and then being able to hang out with everybody, that's actually, that it pays itself, you know. There's ups and downs. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think even I understand the feeling of going into standby mode, or I don't remember what you called it, but sort of powering down to reserve your energy for the evening. And I think sometimes we had the case where we played super late, like at 10 p.m. at night, but you arrive at the place at like, I don't know, like 11 o'clock a.m. So there's like more than 12 hours between the time of your arrival and then your set time, and it's really hard to keep. And then by the time that you actually are supposed to play, you're super tired because it's just been doing, even though you've been doing nothing for all of the day. And then sometimes it's really hard to push yourself, you know, to build yourself up again and to get hyped for the show, because you need to get into that place where you are like, okay, let's do this, let's get out there and let's like do a great show, even though you've just been spending the whole day like lying on a couch or just wandering around aimlessly, not really being able to concentrate on anything. That's how it is for me, at least. I don't know.
I when I'm in a bit more anxiety like place, I sort of rehearse, because I also do the talking in the gigs. I also start rehearsing that in my head, and it never sticks. I always ad lib it. I always improvise. But it sort of keeps you in a sort of working mind space, because it's sort of a fucky thing, actually, because we're there as a job when we have to play, but you're also in your most favorite place ever before you did that. So it's difficult to strike a balance there.
Yeah, totally.
And not to get lost already.
By the way, Kuhn, I just want to say I really love you as an entertainer on stage. I think, I don't know if I ever mentioned that, but I think you're doing a great job in doing like the announcements with Seed. It's always like the whole vibe you and the others also are creating on stage during a Seed show. It's so cool. It's so lighthearted and fun. It's great.
Oh, thank you. Well, if you give me compliments, I get quiet, and that's not very good for a podcast, but thank you.
I can just elaborate on that. Because I think
No, let's not.
Because I think the time where I really noticed was, I don't know if everyone knows here, but in 2018, Waldkauz had a sort of 5-year anniversary concert where we invited two other bands to play like a day-long festival, basically. We invited Brisinga and Seed, and it was sort of a small venue, and it was the first Seed show that I ever witnessed really close up, and that was so cool to see how the audience just went wild with your music. That was so cool. And that just shows.
Cool, nice.
And then that's something that's so important to me, is being able to invite bands to play and to get to know the people behind the music and to just be able to create these cool spaces where it's all about, you know, freedom and music and just being super like nice and tolerant to each other.
Yeah, definitely. And well, thank you for your kind words. And it's sort of, before I get back to you, I have a tiny anecdote because it's really funny because it's sort of a mixed feeling that I also do a lot of talking between, which makes sort of, even if we don't play, it's a show. We were sitting behind someone in the bus from Kasfest to the train station because everyone in seat can't drive a car. We only have girlfriends and boyfriends who can. But someone said, yeah, I saw that band Seed. I don't know if I really liked their music, but the talking was very amusing. Okay, so that was very funny to me, and I didn't really know what to think of it. But then again, it's a compliment. I'll take it. Talking about those safe spaces and you inviting us all the way to Germany, which is super cool, was a great adventure, is one thing that really stands out, I think, as well on festivals, is bands inviting each other to play on stage so much that people sometimes lose track of who is actually in which band. And this is a tradition that I first witnessed when Faun and Omnia and Valraven, they were all crashing each other's stages, and that sort of set a tradition that I'm very happy that the newer wave of bands completely continued that tradition. It's super cool.
Yeah, I just thought of the... Yeah, I mean, we're talking a lot about Kasselfest because that's sort of a shared experience between the two of us and hopefully also between many of the people listening, because if not, you should definitely attend that festival. It's a really amazing festival. And because we had, I think, with three of you on stage, or was it just two? I can't remember.
On Kasfest, you mean? That was Roman.
And then we also had Fanny from Brisinga on. So I think we were like nine people for one song on stage for that one song. And if you look at videos of that, it's just absolute mayhem because the stage that we played on that day, it was like the main stage, so it's fairly big, but still the stage was just full with people just going wild and having an amazing time. And that's such a fun memory. It's the best.
Yeah, definitely. I wonder if other people also realize how much guesting is going on. So I'm curious to hear that of you. By the way, I think it's also a very good thing to do because, like you said, Kasfest for us is common ground. So that's why we name it a lot. But I think we'll definitely, in future episodes, put some of the smaller festivals and initiatives in the spotlights that have a fond spot in our heart, because they are definitely out there and they keep the festival scene vibrant and unpredictable and great.
No, totally. I think, I don't know. I don't know about you, but I think we went a bit off the rails with what we originally had planned today, right? It was sort of went all over the place a bit, but I hope it was still entertaining to some degree. I don't know.
I hope so too. Yeah, I hope so too. Yeah, sorry guys. This is basically a live recording, which I think you can notice, and I think we'd like to keep it that way. So bear with us if we go all over the place.
Yeah. We promise like future episodes also will involve some more structure, but I think we got a lot of messages, very kind messages from people listening who were very encouraging, and a lot of those messages were very supportive in the way that it was just nice. It was just like sitting beside fire with some friends and just listening to them talk while everyone's, you know, having a nice drink or just hanging out. And I think if we can keep that spirit, then everything's perfect, because I think that's exactly what we want to accomplish with this, right? To to keep each other company and also to extend that company to the people listening.
Yeah, definitely, and to give this. People something to listen to with the after festival dips set in. Definitely what we want to do is create that interactive thing that has already been going on. People have been sending private messages, some comments on our Facebook page. We're also going to be uploading the episodes on YouTube, where you can leave comments, but you can also private message Niklas or our Facebook page or me. And we definitely look at all your messages, and it's great to have so much input, and you can already feel the heart that people have for this, the same that we do. And if we don't talk about it right away, it's not because we are ignoring the fact that you send it in, but it's just because there's so much to actually talk about. And we'll definitely visiting your ideas.
Yeah, and especially also with, I think we might have talked about that in the first episode, that we want to have guests on eventually. I think we're definitely planning on doing that. We just want to get like a couple of episodes out first to sort of get familiar with each other and with this format that we're doing, because I don't think any of us has like former experience with doing a podcast, or I don't know, doing like radio or something. I don't know what could be comparable. So we're still just figuring this out. You know, what is a good length, or you know, what is a good structure to give this. So we'll have guests on eventually. We're very much looking forward to extending the diversity and not just have it be another podcast of two dudes talking. So,
which is cool. But
I think that's kind of a stereotype by now. But yeah, we're definitely looking forward to having some people on to sort of broaden our perspective on things and listen to what they have to offer. I've also actually been thinking about, Kuhn, I really like, because I'm very sure that I have an amazing taste in music. So I was thinking if we would want to create like a playlist that we can add on to, you know, that we can regularly update with new pagan folk or like folk adjacent music that people can listen to get some, you know, to listen to some new stuff and to find some new interesting things. What do you feel about that?
I think that's a cool idea, and that way people can also maybe send in stuff that we don't know, and then we can create a sort of self-sustaining super playlist. Let's definitely set that up.
Yeah, cool. So yeah, I think that is all for today. I mean, we could go on for many hours, but I think we got to keep some of that fire for the future, for future episodes.
Yes, that is correct. Sorry, guys, we're doing one episode a week and we're not going to be talking 24 hours.
I mean, I wish, though.
Well, who knows what the future holds? I mean, I would like to thank everybody for listening, and I look forward to their messages and input. Do you have anything to add?
I just wanted to before we end this, I think last time during the end we did a music recommendation, just a small one. I mean, at least I did. I think I sort of put you on the spot there. So maybe you have something now.
Nothing has changed. You're putting me on the spot again. Okay. Well, musical recommendation. You go first. I'll think of something real quick.
So I want to recommend something a bit weird, I guess. Or I don't know. I mean, people who listen to Pagan Folk already have like a pretty broad musical horizon, I assume. So I'm going to recommend a Russian musical project, which is called Purpa. I don't know if that's the right way to pronounce it, but it's spelled P-H-U-R-P-A. Yeah. And it is basically Tibetan ritual music, I think. Maybe I think they put some sort of ambient and darker stuff on it, but It's very like it's these 18-minute, very dark and ritual soundscapes. It sounds a bit evil now, but it doesn't sound evil or menacing. It's just very alien to me because I don't have any experience with that type of music. But it's really interesting to listen to. It has a lot of interesting sounds and a lot of like throat singing. And I think with the current, there's currently in Pagan Funk, there's a lot of focus on like ritual and, with bands like Heilung and bands that are similar. So I think it's definitely worth checking out something from a different religious direction. So I'd very much recommend Purpa from Russia.
Cool. I will be definitely checking them out as well, and we'll add it to the playlist. Okay, so I have a quick thing that's really cool. It's not very like recent that I discovered it, but I think it deserves a spot, and I think a lot of people don't know it because it's not an act that can be seen on any of these festivals, and that's Manam. That's actually a male choir, which, if you like the it might be a very dishonoring comparison, but if you like the Song of Lonely Mountain and like from The Hobbit, these guys make singing just sound amazing, and it makes me sort of ashamed of singing on stage. Manam has some great vocal compositions. It's unbelievable. So that's just my thing, and next time I will be prepared for your question.
We'll see about that. So with that, we say goodbye for now. Thank you all for listening, hopefully. We don't know, until then, stay safe, stay inside, be nice to each other, and see you all next time.
Yeah, see you next time, and everybody that is now struggling with their health, we wish you well, we give you positive energy and strength. See you next time.